Who are you? You might think you know the answer to that question, but what if I told you that your sense of self is not as fixed as you think? What if I told you your identity is constantly being shaped by the people around you? That's the radical idea at the heart of Brian Lowry's book, Selfless: The Social Creation of You. Lowry, a psychologist at Stanford University, argues that our identities are not something we're born with, but something we create through our interactions with others. Here's Brian to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Brian Lowry, incessant asker of questions, explorer of life, black man, professional psychologist, the Walter Kenneth Kilpatrick Professor of Organizational Behavior at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and the author of Selfless: The Social Creation of You. This book is the current landing spot of a journey I've been on to understand the role others play in the creation of our reality. What I've written is based on my understanding of psychology gained by 25 years of professional study and research, while also touching lightly on philosophy, literature, and history. The goal? To affect the way you understand yourself and make the world a larger, more interesting place for you. So with that in mind, here are five big ideas from the book. Big idea number one. Although most healthy people experience the self as inside the body, this does not have to be the case. This is important because what I want to challenge is the way most people understand the self. And this starts by having you consider the possibility that the self need not be where you typically think it is. That is, the self need not be inside your body. One way that scientists can demonstrate this is by creating the illusion of an out-of-body experience. How do they do that? They put a virtual headset on you and then have you see an image of your body from the back. So it's as if you're standing up looking at the back of your own body. Then they stroke your avatar's back, or seem to stroke your avatar's back, while stroking your back at the same time. Now, they'll move you from the spot you were standing in and ask you to return to that spot. And what tends to happen is that people move towards the spot their avatar seemed to occupy, suggesting that their sense of self had drifted from their body toward their avatar. Now, this is a small demonstration, but it's important because it suggests that the experience that we tend to have of being inside our body is not a given, that can be broken. Big idea number two. You can, and probably do, incorporate other people into your sense of self. Consider your face for a moment. I'm sure, if you're healthy, that when you see your face, you recognize it. You see a photo of yourself, you see a video of yourself, you know it's you. What's amazing is that scientists can create an illusion by which you bring someone else's face into your sense of self. How do they do this? Well, it's actually very similar to the out-of-body experience experiment. So they sit you in front of someone else, and then you watch that person's face being stroked with a feather on the cheek while having your own face being stroked at the same time. After they've done that procedure for a bit, they show you photos. Now, some of the photos are just you, some of the photos are the person you saw, and a number of the photos are a mixture, so they're morphed, so that there are photos that are 50-50, half you, half the other person, photos that are a bit more you than the other person, and photos that are a bit more the other person than you. Now, as you see the photos, you're simply asked, is this photo mostly you or not? If you had your face stroked at the same time that the other person's face was stroked, when you see a face that's a bit more than them you, you tend to confuse it with you. You tend to say it's mostly you. What this suggests is that you're bringing their face into your sense of self. I think this is an amazing effect. It demonstrates our ability to expand our sense of self by including others in it. Now, psychologists use this, not the face part so much, but the idea of including others in self as a way of demonstrating closeness. So a number of psychologists now, primarily Aaron and Aaron, have demonstrated that people can indicate the degree to which they see their self as including other people, and they use that as a measure of closeness. So, not only can we change where you think yourself is, we can change what you think yourself is. This is an amazing effect. Big idea number three. Social identities are communally created and owned. We're born into communities, families, neighborhoods, nations, by which I mean we're given identities before we have any say. And then these communities define identities that are available to us and whether or not we can inhabit them. Consider a controversial one right now, gender. So what it means to be a man or a woman or non-binary or any other gender is determined within a community. No one just comes out and just knows what it means to be a man or woman because those ideas, those roles to inhabit the meaning of being a man or woman means to be a man or woman within the context of relationships and a community. So the clothes we wear, the way we carry ourselves, whether or not we request pronouns, all of these are ways that we are making a request to inhabit a communal creation of a particular gender identity. In our relationships then, those identities, the identities that we hope to have, are either affirmed or denied. And my claim is we are a man or woman or whatever other gender we'd like to occupy if people engage with us as if we are. So identities exist within communities and are affirmed or denied in interactions in the relationships we have in those communities. Big idea number four. If we think of freedom as being able to say, do, or be what we want without others constraining us, having a self limits freedom. At this point, it should be clear that I think of the self as constructed within relationships, within communities. The identities we occupy, the way we define ourselves, is a function of the relationships we have and how other people see and relate to us. I opened this with a description of myself as a Black man, as a professor, as an author. All of these things exist within relationships. You're reading my book makes me an author. Without a book, without readers, I'm not an author. Now, this constraint can feel very comforting. I understand who I am. I understand what people expect of me, how people will engage with me. It situates me in the world, my sense of self, my identity. But it comes at a cost. It constrains who I am in a way that allows me to understand the world, but it does constrain me. So a self constrains our freedom. Big idea number five, the self can function like a time machine. Humans are the only creatures we know of that are aware of their own eventual demise. Some social psychologists have theorized that this leads to terror that needs to be managed because we've evolved to desire life. The theory of terror management, or terror management theory, suggests that one way humans manage this is to seek symbolic immortality. For example, when reminded of death, people that don't believe in an afterlife tend to increase their estimate of how long their national culture will persist by thousands of years. It seems that they are seeking increased longevity through the part of the self defined by the nation. In addition to symbolic immortality, the self also helps create a sense that life is meaningful. In research I've done, for example, what you see is that people who have a connection between their current self and their future self report a greater sense of meaning in life. That is a sense that the self as you experience it now will extend into the future in time, increases the feeling that life is meaningful in the moment. Taken together, these ideas suggest that our selves exist in relationships within communities, are constructed from interactions both intimate and fleeting, limit our freedom in favor of providing coherence in the face of social chaos, and provides the possibility of transcendence. From my perspective, perhaps most importantly, this all points to the inability to even be a self alone, and therefore the interdependence inherent in our humanity, and the responsibility we all bear for the creation of each other. Imagine what the world would be if we all saw this more clearly. I hope you enjoyed these ideas and that you pick up the book. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. That was five big ideas from Selfless, The Social Creation of You by Brian Lowry. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.